Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will
on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Speaking of relatively unconventional, I got up at 8 a.m. yesterday and was working through till about 20 past midnight. Editing and uploading the past, I think, nearly 3 weeks of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. So, yeah, quite a lot of work to be done. It was unbelievable. And you know what was really, really, really cool is the quality of the shows that we had. You know, it was just wow. It was, ex-astronaut Brian O'Leary. We had a good friend of ours in New Zealand, Grace Hayden. Exposing copious quantities of corruption in this country, as if there's any other kind of quantity. We had Casper Leach from Time for Hemp, Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio, the fabulous Doc Bean, and Galen as well, qualified physicist, who questions 9/11. And one of the particular ones that I thought was very, very interesting, and by interesting I mean scaring the bejesus out of me, was A.C. Griffith. Talking about how the Christchurch quake was a man-made fiasco, and we're all going to be exterminated anyway. So, you know, nice, light-hearted content there. And there was, the 91-year-old lady, Betty Hooper, talking about ADHD and all of that. And one of the best shows that we did was actually one that Will and I did, bro. When you did the second hour and I did the first hour, that was actually like a really good show to listen to, man. I was very, very impressed, particularly with your kind of, I don't know, no BS second hour of that particular show.
Was that a Saturday show?
Yeah, you're like throwing down the gauntlet, brother.
I think I was that much of an extremist on Saturday, but hey.
Yeah, Will, you might be calling it Charlie Sheen. Before you know you'll be marrying two porn stars and starting a family soon.
I can't say I agree with everything about Charlie Sheen, to be honest. I appreciate his frankness, but I think some of what he said was, you know, just not giving a damn. I suppose that's what he's proud of. But the media's just ridiculous in their coverage of it. It's just you know, remixes all over the place. Charlie Sheen dubstep remixes getting 2 million views. It's typical.
Awesome. I got to see that.
It's typical lowest common denominator crap that everything descends into.
Yeah. Well, we've got some very awesome guests for you today, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have George Heminger and coming up next. George Heminger and Webster Tarpley are our guests today, first hour and second hour. So it's going to be pretty freaking awesome, I can assure you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Unity, please don't desert me. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Oh, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Now, speaking of the news here, and this is something that I've found particularly interesting of late. What was it called? Well, you might have heard about this. The government is now saying that because of the Christchurch quake, they want to sell off public assets. This is, of course, delivered policy after the policy of selling the assets anyway. But now we've got an even better excuse. Oh, the economy's in trouble and we've had an earthquake. Is that double whammy just to make everybody so freaked out that they'd, you know, do anything for them? And I thought to myself, well, okay, that's great. Typical National Party. In fact, typical government. Full stop, isn't it? You know, just looking around for justifications to do anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not the National Party. It's just what governments do. It's just what power does. And it just gives all their little idiot followers another excuse to grab onto as their lives disintegrate. You know, well, the government it's over 1% of GDP. That's why they're trying to make money in this country anywhere they can now. New Zealand's equivalent of eBay now is going to be taxed. Trade me.
Trade me is going to be taxed now.
That's what they're saying.
Isn't that fabulous?
Over $2,000 worth of trade me per annum, and you're taxed.
Oh, well.
At over 20%.
Well, you can't let people get away from paying tax to the bank as well. That would just be unlikely.
No, I mean, trade me represents some sort of free economy, albeit with some regulation, but some sort of free market model happens to be the country's most successful model. That's why it was sold out for freaking millions of dollars to foreigners, of course. Stupid New Zealanders think they're patriotic when they sell themselves out. It's a little scum. But anyway.
Yeah, don't you just love how people, bro, they're just like, oh, well, you know, I'm just retarded.
aside from that, though, I mean, it's shown itself to be not that complicated idea, especially when you can copy eBay's model. Sorry, anyone could have thought of this. And yet, it's extremely successful because it's a free market model. Anyone can put up their crap to sell and then anyone else can buy it. Albeit there are some disputes and some problems, but that's what happens when you have freedom amongst a largely idiotic population. But sorry to be mean, but yeah. Anyway, the government wants to get in on that. The government also, where's the government stepping in also? Oh, I heard something the other day. They're basically just doing cuts all across the board here. It's just a reflection 1.6, of what's happening 1.6. In Britain.
1.6. I got this in from Jeff in at Rush FM studio just before the show today. 1.6 billion has been cut from benefits with no jobs for the unemployed to go to. So his recommendation is that people need to figure out how to generate some sort of income, you know, whether that be an income of food or an income of coffee or whatever. You know, doing volunteer work or something along those lines. Do something to make sure that you're at least fed.
Well, yeah, part of this I don't mind, you know, because benefits aren't the answer. We need to form an alternative real economy anyway in this country, and this could just be, you know, could be double-edged. It could lead to something more positive, or it could just lead to total desolation. But, you know, the government's also pulling out of state-funded TV, which was the other component I was forgetting. TVNZ7, one of the digital networks over here, only formed, probably only 18 months, 24 months ago. They're about to lose 20 to 30 staff, which I think's great. And incidentally, some of their idiotic so-called reporters they have on there will be gone. So that's good. That's on the good side. The state is going to have less control over our TV networks. But then once again, a lot of the left crying out about that. Oh, it's a public asset. You know, whatever. At least I see that as a positive, don't you, Vinny?
Well, getting less government scum employed. Yeah, I guess I can see the bright side of that.
not too hard to see the bright side, is it?
Yeah. Well, you see, this is the interesting thing, right? Is like people find it to be so terrible and so horrible that government scum are getting out of the job, and John Key's going, we need to make everything more efficient by firing people because we want to make the unemployment rate go down by firing people, etc. To my mind, it's just all insane anyway, so it doesn't matter what they do, it's bound to just be something ridiculous. In fact, when was the last time the government did something that was reasonable? Well, you see, I've just stumped myself. Okay. Oh my god. Oh my god. Where is it? Okay, come on. Think, Vinny. Think. There must have been something the government's done that's good.
The thing is, no, you know, like
still drawing a blank.
These state-funded TV networks, like TVNZ7, which is about to fall here, is going to fall into the hands of a private corporation, of course. I mean, that is kind of the sad thing, and it falls into the hands of Sky, and then as soon as this news was announced, Sky's shares went up, you know, a couple of percent to like $5.50 the other afternoon, and my uncle-in-law over there will be grinning at Sky. But, I mean, they're set to gain from this, and that's what people say, you know, we poured money into this, state money's gone into this, and now it's going to be the reward is going to go to a private corp which already has huge multinational sway. The solution is not the government, is not the corporation. The solution is people need to take the channel back themselves. Or people need to find their own ways of influencing the media themselves, as Vinny and myself are trying to do. So that's my answer. It's not one or the other. Once again, it's not Labour or National. It's not left or right. It's the third way, and not Tony Blair's third way either.
Tony's third way. I mean, what was that? Rape children or something? Never mind.
No, Tony Blair introduced New Labour. This is going back over a decade now. Introduced New Labour in Britain, and it was the third way, and it was what's referred to kind of on the left as the neoliberal agenda. But it's basically a bit of conservatism, a bit of leftism.
Haven't you found it funny that the it's like during the 80s and stuff like that, we had these quote-unquote neoliberal reforms. And during the 2000s, they called them neocon reforms. So it's like they're doing the exact same thing. It's just the names have changed, and they're saying that it's now the right wing's fault, not the left wing's fault, who started it. And I think this really kind of personifies and solidifies specifically the concept of the difference between left and right. The only difference between them is what frickin' period of time it is, and what policies that they're instituting. You know, I mean, other than that, they're the exact same thing, and the definitions kind of change over time, and nobody seems to notice that the left wingers have become right wingers, and the right wingers have become left wingers, and together they become central wingers who just basically go there to Parliament to wing it.
Well, it has to be a central policy.
Speaking of which, what's his name? There's this freaking heck, scumbag, Jamie Lee Ross, wins Botany by-election. All right, now this is an interesting thing though. He got 8,150 votes. Closest competitor was Labour, the old Michael Wood, who said to me personally that when I asked a question about the search and surveillance bill stealing away all our rights, he says, yeah, I really, really agree with you on it, but I can't really say it in public or anything like that because there's a lot of, controversy circling around the party at the moment. And to me, that just says I'm a spineless piece of crap and so I'm perfect to represent you in Parliament. Now, a turnout for this particular election was second lowest on record. Only 36.5%, as opposed to way back in the day, where it was like 56% of people turned out. And interestingly enough, the National Party candidate, the guy who just gets an A for arrogance, Jamie Lee Ross, who's 25 going on 40 and who has never had a real job in his life, became a career politician since the age of 18, groomed for the job, like a prize husky, gets in. And he's now, remember how we had Gareth Hughes on from the Green Party, the youngest MP in Parliament? He's now been surpassed by Jamie Lee Ross. Isn't that positive? We're now getting youthfuller and youthfuller and youthfuller crap.
Jamie Lee Ross doesn't look young, though. I mean, he's just 25, looks like a 40-year-old Guido or something. I mean,
that's exactly what I thought, a 40-year-old Guido. How you took the words right out of my mouth.
I'm being mean. I mean, I guess it kind of is. But look, I mean, I'm not into personal attacks except for...
Yeah, I know, I know. I mean, I just suspect that there's a few bodies in the trunk of his car, you know?
No, he's going to look like the Godfather in a few more years. That pot belly gets a bit bigger and that. But, I mean, the guy's well-spoken. You know, if I can give him that credit, he's well-spoken, he's articulate, he's quick, and he knows their party policy inside out. I don't think he knows a hell of a lot else inside out, but I mean, he's like you say, he's been groomed. He was on their campus, and he was everything else. He's one of their little horse sellouts from age 17, 18, and they hoodwinked him young enough to the point where, you know, he was fashioned into what they made him. I mean, myself at 16, 17, I was kind of, you know, a bit of an ACT Party person, and had I stayed at university and stayed in the mainstream path, I could have ended up like, you know, a hoodwinked coward to that extent too. but luckily I had a couple of revelations in my life. They're yet to come for Jamie. Anyway.
Will they ever come? I mean, you know, it's like when you become...
Oh, they will. We'll make sure
when you
they do.
Oh, come on, man. I mean, when you do become very successful in any particular field, it kind of insulates you with this self-confidence that makes you want to never investigate or think about anything, right? Isn't that what happens? Like John Key, for example, he'd never questioned the evils of the banking industry because, hey, it made him a really rich man. You know, why would he ever backtrack upon what made him personally successful? You know what I'm saying? Why would I or you reconsider saying that 9/11 is an inside job? Because hey, it's kind of made us what we
are. Here's the problem for John Key. Here's the problem for our Prime Minister here, and here's the problem for Jamie Lee Ross, and here's the problem for all these fake conservatives out there. When it comes out, as it will this year, because we're going to make it come out, that we have fiat currency being peddled in this country, the whole country is being indebted by the very issuance of currency, not by foul spending, not by private-public partnerships, not by what's public and what's, you know, corporate, not by beneficiaries, not by any of these little musical chair arguments. When people realize that the system inherently issues debt and inherently destroys the real value of our currency, then these people will be shown for the little criminal bastards that they are. Because there's no way John Key can argue that he's not aware of fractional reserve banking. There's no way he can argue that he's not aware of the private Federal Reserve and their little banks to scam. He's totally aware of that leverage. He worked for Merrill Lynch in London. He knows the Crown's evil. And so when this comes out, he's got nowhere to run. And he should know that. And one of his little spooks should tell him today, if he hasn't heard already, that, you know, when the public know, he's in big trouble.
Well, let's just hope the public never finds out. I mean, that would be their modus operandi, wouldn't it? Well, I mean, keeping things under wraps is such a brilliant idea because it means that your agenda can keep getting advanced the whole way through, you know, and nothing can stop you.
Look, I mean, it's just so sickening. I watched these Bodney by-election debates that Vinny put up on YouTube, and I tell you what, the whole debate, they were sickening. It just made me want to throw up watching these people. Like, it literally made me sort of butterflies in my stomach and just want to just smash the desk or something. Like, listening
to these
people.
You probably weren't the only one, Will, because Ross only
won. I wouldn't have been able
to
keep quiet if I were you. If I were the cameraman, I would not have been able to keep quiet. I would have just thrown something at them. I mean, it was just terrible. It was just absolutely the best person there. And financial policy was Lynn Murphy. But even still, you know, like, they're just not shattering any paradigms. It was really disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's probably why there was such a low voter turnout and why Jamie Lee's majority was 7,000 less than Pansy Wong's during the 2008 election. Because let's face it, everybody was kind of pretty freaking dull. You know, didn't really mix it up or change anything. Or, you know, it's just, well, there's better things you could be doing, essentially. And I completely understand the public's apathy towards politics in this day and age because it is so boring in general. And they've made it that way purposefully so that people don't take any interest in it. You know, I mean, what? If you listen to this show, I mean, the politics that we talk about is vastly more entertaining at the very least. Talk about information overload. You know, everything's so insane in our society that we wouldn't dare question what these politicians are going on about, even if we know for a fact that they're wrong, right? What are they even thinking? Are they even thinking? Where is the paradigm shifting here? Isn't politics supposed to be about change rather than just the word, but the actual action? You know, here's the news boss, same as the old boss, that passes for change these days. Why would they want change?
They're working for the crown. This is a private corporation. And they're working for the old world money in London. They don't want anything to change. They do not want anything to change.
Well, I think change is scary and dangerous for some people. Like, oh, I've become so comfortable with being a complete and utter slave and having all my assets taken off me and then my currency devalued and the price of petrol and food going up endlessly. I don't want change. It might be bad. What if it gets worse?
Yeah, better the devil we know than the devil we don't, sort of thing.
That's getting progressively worse anyway. You silly, silly bugger.
You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will. AmericanFreedomRadio.com, getting enraged at the retarded citizens of our nation and the pathetic choices that they make for change. And we'll be right back after the break.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison, just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command, because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end a planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will. AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, of course. Now, we were getting into a discussion about, you know, our politicians and things of that nature and how they're sort of in a fishbowl, essentially. Everything that they see outside of it is distorted to a certain extent, and they keep going round and round. And because they've got memories that are about 7 seconds long, they don't remember going over areas that they've already gone over before. Like, for example, the topic of privatization, each and every time that anything in this country has been privatized has been a massive failure. Essentially, it just privatizes profits and socializes all the debt and the cost. And yet, they still keep doing it. Now, some people put this down to stupidity. I put this down to World Bank policy. That's exactly what it is. If you don't believe me, you go and Google or startpage.com, preferably, because they don't track and trace you, apparently. World Bank white papers leaked, or something to that effect. They had a whole bunch of documents leaked about them, because when they loan countries money, they then charge them exorbitant quantities of debt and give them, like, what was it, Will, 111 points or 101 points of how to basically enslave your nation for the administrative convenience of international corporations. And we've got copious quantities of companies that are coming into this country now, with the best wishes of all these people, of course, who are selling us really substandard products that are just, well, quite frankly, in a lot of cases, dangerous, you know? Like, for example, we've got the fabulous California oranges that get shipped over here that have zero nutritional value, heaps of pesticides all over them, to compete with, or rather to dominate, the market here in oranges, which we grow very, very well, apparently. And then export them, of course. So that we don't
get the argument, Vinny,
fruit of our products.
Here's the argument, you know, the status, the big government guys, they say, we need these officials, we need all these experts, all these government-appointed officials, sorry, to protect us from, you know, possible poisons, toxins in Chinese goods or, you know, just poor quality produce in general. And yet at the same time, we have this huge government, we have this huge architecture that just looks over the individual with a fine-tooth comb and audits everybody, and it's just right in your face anytime you try and build something on your house. And yet they allow the melamine into the country. They allow the dangerous vaccines that are banned in Britain and the United States into New Zealand. They allow these dangerous GMOs, these corn and soy GMO products, hugely dangerous, with inserts that slide around on the genome and can just do all number of carcinogenic effects. And, you know, our big government allows all this because they work hand in hand with the corporations, and that's what most are yet to figure out. They just think, oh, well, if we employ the experts and we have all these guys at Auckland University and Victoria University and they're consulting with the government, we're just going to be safe. When rather we end up with a bunch of co-opted, paid-off, corrupt people giving us the worst of the worst at higher and higher prices daily. And like New Zealand just becomes this big, you know, experiment for any multinational corp, it seems. You know, so we just end up getting crap.
I don't think it's not experimental, though. I mean, they know that what they're doing works for them, but not for us.
They're just seeing how well it works, though. I mean, it's not experimental.
Yeah.
They know they're going to kill us. They know they're going to poison us with these products. They know that, you know, they know they're ripping us off. But it's just
testing to see what the breaking point is for us humans down here. You know, it's like, oh, what if we poisoned this and that and that and that and that? Oh, wait on a second. They get really ticked off when you try to regulate vitamins and minerals. Let's just leave that for a bit and then just make all their current foods and everything totally nutrient deficient so that they need supplements really, really badly. And then we'll try and regulate them. You know, I think that's the way these scum work, isn't it? I mean, they're total manipulative, sociopathic filth, you know, and that's really my opinion about who runs this planet. Convenience-driven, sociopathic filth. They want to kill all the humanity and have the rest of the world for themselves. You know,
we need a government.
They're like the Uber consumer, all right? The Uber irresponsible consumer who will just consume until they get flatulent and obese and incapable of actually to looking after themselves, except be parasitic to other organisms. That's essentially what our government is. That's essentially what our banking system is, our medical system, our media. Every single strata of society is now dominated by this methodology.
Well, the thing is,
faced with a system so complex that is dominated with that kind of paradigm?
We need people that have general knowledge, and at the same time as having general knowledge, can look deeply into any specific matter if they have to. And so having a big government and all these experts and all these PhDs didn't help me in the first 10, 15, even 20 years of life keep away from sodium fluoride. They didn't help me keep away from aspartame and MSG. They didn't, you know what I mean? So I got poisoned along with everyone else by these bastards. Yeah, because I guess I trusted them. Because I guess I didn't question my surroundings enough. You know? Not enough at a young age, perhaps. But anyway, and that's kind of my fault. But at the same time, it's the fault of people who are in power, who put all their trust and faith in experts to run their lives for them. We have to be able to run our own lives, or someone else will do it for you. And when they do it for you, they won't do it out of the grace of God. They'll do it for their own benefit, because that's the sort of tendency, and those are the sort of people that rise to positions of power. Generally, scumbags, you know, 95%, we'd have to say, based upon history. Scumbags rise to power. Not many good, upstanding people. That's just the way it is, because good people aren't as determined and ruthlessly cutthroat to be able to get to, you know, the apex of the pyramid. It just doesn't happen.
Well, it's the thing, right? You know. If you're like two guys climbing a mountain, the guy who gets there first is the guy who cuts the other guy's leg off at the bottom. You know, because it's just like, wow, they don't get there because they're particularly talented or anything like that. They just got there because they completely disadvantaged the other person to make sure that it's a freaking rigged game. That's why the evil, ruthless scumbags wind up going all the way to the top, because the person who's honest sitting next to him and thinking it's a good, honest competition, a race or whatever, doesn't see that axe coming at his leg. You know, doesn't suspect.
The good people just can't guess it's going on around them. The good people just like, oh, whatever, well, you know, go and smoke another joint or something. It's like, I don't smoke.
Good people aren't suspicious, aren't they? Just,
well, no, I mean, they're just trusting little idiots, and it's sad. Not everyone, of course, but just by and large. I mean, they don't trust their neighbor or the guy down the street. But when it comes to officialdom and a man in a suit on TV and he's talking all properly with 6 years voice training, they trust him. Totally. I can have a little bit of a pommy accent and people trust me. I mean, it's stupid. It's like, don't trust me because of the way I sound or the way someone comes across. Trust them based upon the consistency and the honesty of what they're saying, and over time, and try and validate what they're saying. Question it to the core, to the absolute core. And, you know, when it comes to government, though, on the subject of how these guys get to power, in my mind, government should have very few roles. They should have the role of issuing currency, issuing real, nationalized, state-owned currency in line with the growth, if there is any, in an economy. So in line with the goods and services available within any closed system, the money supply should be expanded or contracted. And that's how you stop inflation and deflation. That's how you have a stable, predictable economy. Okay, so that's number one. They should be able to defend their nation from foreigners. That's government role number two. And they should be, thirdly, they should be able to settle disputes within their territory. So we shouldn't have fights to the death between neighbors to settle a simple little dispute over a fence line. We should have a judiciary system maybe without the Masons. And that's about it, you know. Oh, we don't need government saying...
Don't you think that's a bit too revolutionary? I mean, come on. No Masons in the judiciary. Nobody would recognize
it. I'm not an anarchist. I'm not being a total idealistic anarchist here. I'm saying limited government, because there are always going to be disputes. There are always going to be, you know, bad people in a society. There's a need for some sort of intelligence network at all times. Because even if you have a good, wholesome government, some people are going to want to take over. You know, it's always going to be that quest for power. So you need a defense force externally. You probably need an internally focused intelligence agency. But not to the point where you're putting cameras in people's houses, people like us, Vinny. I mean, it's not to the point where you're spying on people and making our lives difficult. You know, I just want a better country. They've got no right to freaking spy on me. You know, and they've got no right to spy on hundreds of other people in this country who are just posting things on Facebook and have their own blogs and stuff. It's just not on. And I know what they're going to do over the coming couple of years, as the good people start to push harder, they're going to really demonize us in this country, and we're going to be the new Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to turn everyone against us and say, oh, you know, these tinfoil hat people think fluoride's bad for you, you know, and have a big laugh at us. And they're going to pin a couple of us up and make examples.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know where it's all going, so this is all on the record for when they do it.
Well, you know,
they do anything to us.
I was just thinking the other day, I was thinking today, you know how the oil prices are going up, right? The news came out yesterday and said that petrol prices in New Zealand may go up by as much as another 50 cents, and they're already at $2.15 a litre, okay? And it's astronomical. I've never seen the gas prices that high, and they're saying they're going to go higher. Now, this is no surprise. This is of no surprise whatsoever to me because I've known for at least a month or two in advance of the news announcing these oil price hikes that they were going to go up astronomically. You know, I knew, and anybody who listened to the show also knew. And that's the thing, that's the difference between us and mainstream media, is we'll tell you things far in advance of what the mainstream media will, and we'll expand on the information far more than they will as well. There's almost, and I was talking with Nicola Grace from Health Freedom today. She says that she no longer watches the news except to keep up to date with the propaganda they're pumping out to the public. But other than that, the news that she gets is directly off of YouTube. All right. Did you know that Wisconsin, the capital, has now been taken over? Madison, Wisconsin, has been taken over by protesters. Did you hear about that? I sure as heck didn't. Not until I was told this morning. No mainstream media has reported on that whatsoever. And apparently this has happened in three capitals across three different states. I forget which the other two are. You know, and this is really, really big, big, big news, man. And they're talking about getting in line with what the Egyptians are doing and taking the United States back off the banksters. Now, there's a very, very clear message to the US government there that they either need to pull their socks up and basically start exterminating people now, or they're going to lose control of their country, you know? And civil war has been talked about for a while as well. And, you know, we warn people about these things. We had Doc Bean on last week talking about the need to prepare and store food, lots of guns, lots of ammunition. And it used to be like when people did that kind of thing, they were seen as quote-unquote crazies, gun nuts, etc. And now, yeah, the only people, the only thing that people get called when they do that is prepared for what is actually coming. The threat level in there, I mean, seriously, forget the terror threat level. Right, you know, that's just a joke. All right, terrorism is just a farce. Let's just get that out of the way. But the government threat level, in fact, you know, maybe there should be a patriot group up there that says, you know, oh, government threat level is in the red today, or it's orange, it's fruity today, something along those lines. You know, some description of warning system. There is no national warning system or test or any. This is a test of the emergency broadcast. The government is about to come and kill you. Get the heck out of your homes and head for the effing hills. You know, that would be great, but maybe not. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we'll be right back after this short break.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where'd you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery.
They print a 100 buck and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan but don't print the interest, so there'll never be enough.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about commercial slavery. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. With Will on American Freedom Radio and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. I've taken to posting up the Vinnie Eastwood Show archives to GorillaMedia.co.nz so that you can have a little look about what we discuss on the show. And I do know for a fact that we have some very avid listeners out there, and the moment we stopped... We stopped putting the archives up promptly. I was getting emails left, right, and centre and Skype calls wondering where the heck our fabulous Vinnie Eastwood show is. So sorry about that, everybody. I can assure you it wasn't my fault. And as soon as I got all the archives, I was up at 8 o'clock in the morning and didn't stop working until 20 past midnight that day to get it all updated and fabulous for you. Also, to the radio station owners and or people of that nature listening, if you'd like to carry this show, we've also got a new page for our affiliates under the archive section of the Vinnie Eastwood Show where you can download episodes of the show and rebroadcast them on your networks, provided you sign the affiliate agreement with our fabulous people here at American Freedom Radio. No term contracts or anything along those lines, so it's all good because we really want to get this show as out and about as much as we humanly can because of the fact that we're going into a very trying time in human history. And I wouldn't profess to say me or Will are they going to be the saviors of humanity or anything grandiose like that. But we certainly are doing our part, probably more so than anybody else in broadcasting in New Zealand at the very least. And the whole American concept of freedom and liberty and justice and all of that, hey, we're on the exact same boat with you because we've all got the same global banking enemy master type cats. And we want to go on as many radio shows as possible and have as many wonderful guests on our radio show as possible. Because this information, seriously, man, it needs to get out there. Honestly, I wish I could, I don't know, put my radio show in a vaccine and contaminate everybody with them. You know, you can get autoimmune disease when you hear about the New World Order. That'd be great. Or, you know, poison the food supply with the Vinnie Eastwood show. You know, people will bite into a hamburger and all of a sudden they'll realize 9/11 was an inside job. Who knows? I don't think it'll actually.
I mean, Vinnie, on the subject of oil prices, though, I mean, just OPEC are just fear-mongering through February with all this tension in the Middle East. And they've hiked prices 15% in 1 month. 15%. $15 US a barrel.
Dude, the oil price went up 5 cents in a day.
It's 115 US now a barrel, and you know this is the highest since August 2008. I think in the later part of 2008, it got to about 134 from memory, in around October. That's just from memory, but I mean, it's ridiculous here. And coupled with that, the New Zealand dollar has dropped against the US down to 73 cents now, and so you know we're feeling it here at the pump. And our government is making 47% on the price of petrol at the pump in this country. It's ridiculous. They could just about half the prices overnight if they got their noses out of it, but they just want to get their mitts in everything they can these days to pay back their global masters. They're just scrounging around all over the place.
Look, here's two frickin' policies. If somebody came up with these two policies, I would probably vote for them. Abolish the tax on petrol, abolish personal income tax.
Okay. Would you stand for them?
Well, you know me, bro. There's no way I'm gonna get into politics ever. You know, and several people have asked me, and my response.
You're already
is
in politics, I'd say.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm about as in and effective as I'm gonna get. And I'm just going to grow all this because the media are the people who determine how politics is really goes about because they're the people who release information, who promote political leaders, et cetera, et cetera. So being a politician. Well, exactly. Like, for example, you know, maybe we're guilty of that. Have we hidden information about any political candidates that we don't like or we do well, like?
Obviously, Vinny, I can't or you can't say everything we know about everyone at all times. And so, yeah, we're hiding things by a limit of time. But the general concepts of what I know and believe in are out there for anyone to gauge. And so, yeah. I mean, there's no secrecy here, but then once again, I suppose if we don't talk about the Vatican enough, we'll be Vatican agents too.
Oh, but totally, bro. I don't know about you, bro, but I got my qualifications from the Black Pope.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I come from a big Catholic family on my father's side, and you know, some of them were Masons. I suppose that qualifies me. But no, seriously. Other than that, you know, there's nothing we don't really uncover on the show or try to, and if we're missing something out, which I'm sure we are, I'd like people to contact us, producer@thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and let us know and put us straight and maybe come on air if you really want to.
Yeah, and there's a contact page on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com as well, and we really, really do appreciate the feedback that we get, because the interesting thing about this show is that we're sort of a bit more interactive than a lot of others. For example, a girl is Mary Lafleur, 17 years old, from Michigan, USA, was in a severe car accident on Saturday morning and is in critical condition, and was asked by Deborah Brink, who we've had as a guest on the show, who helps people who disrepair like this, asking everybody to pray and give a wee plug out to her. So there you go. There's an example for you. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And, of course, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Now, on occasions on this show, it's our esteemed pleasure and honour to welcome esteemed individuals from representatives of truth movement and freedom advocates and things of that nature, who are just so freaking fabulous that we can't believe we actually managed to get them on the show. On that note... We have Webster Tarpley on the line. Webster, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you are so very, very welcome. It's an honour to have you here. Now, we wanted to talk about the economy and things of that nature. But before we get into that, I'd love it if you could actually just kind of introduce yourself to the listeners in New Zealand who are maybe unfamiliar with your work. Just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm delighted to talk to a group of people in New Zealand that I may not otherwise reach. For people who want to keep up with me and read more, the website is tarpley.net, tarpley.net, and I have a Twitter feed, Webster G. Tarpley, at Twitter, and I put out strategic bulletins probably 5-6 times a day, and even more in these past weeks with the CIA knocking governments over all around the world, and the empire, right? The IMF and NATO crushing nation states left and right. So please keep up with me at tarpley.net and the Twitter feed Webster G. Tarpley at Twitter. Watch out, there are imposter sites for me on Facebook and also Twitter. But if you go through my website, you can get through the Twitter one. Well, I'm an author. I hope people will read my books. I started with the unauthorized biography of George Bush the Elder in 1992, followed then by, any number of other books, but 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, that's from 2005 to 2007, went through several editions. Then the Obama covert op, I guess we'd call it, Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, that is April of 2008, followed then by Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, September 2008. I was so concerned about Obama that I wrote two books trying to stop him. and then the second edition of Surviving the Cataclysm. Surviving the Cataclysm is the one that would bear on economic issues, and that's your guide through the worst financial crisis in human history, but with a very strong emphasis on program. I am not a commentator. Not really. I'm not an analyst. I provide answers, solutions, things people should do. I try to have a political mass line that anybody in the world can act on at any time, and indeed should. So the idea is action, not analysis, not the armchair stuff. Right now, I'm concerned with stopping the United States and NATO from invading Libya, which is what they want to do. And this is being pushed right now by the British under Cameron and the French under Sarkozy. We're back to the 1956 Suez Coalition.
Canal. Yeah.
right? The old imperialist, right? This old European style cannon boat, you know, gunboat imperialism, and you can see that Obama is, at least for public consumption, he's wavering. And there, I think there is a significant school in the U.S. government that says you, if your color revolution doesn't work, you should let it go. But the British and the French say, no, if the color revolution doesn't work, in other words, your CIA people power coup, then you have to invade. You're going to have a Bay of Pigs. We're very close to Obama's Bay of Pigs, because that's all Bay of Pigs was. It was an attempt to overthrow a government with a ragtag army, similar to what you have today in Libya, a secret army set up by the CIA through the Muslim Brotherhood in Cyrenaica, and they're trying to take over Gaddafi. And it's better for the world if they don't succeed, because imperialism has to stop. If they succeed
indeed,
in Libya,
indeed.
They're going to be on to Belarus.
And imperialism is somewhat of a perennial problem. In the words of George H.W. Bush, if the people were to ever find out what we have done, we would be chased down the streets and lynched. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Webster Tarpley from Tarpley.com. And we'll be right back. Welcome back. Or should I say, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Talking of organized crime, we have one of the world's leading experts on organized crime on the line. His name is Webster Tarpley from Tarpley.net. Welcome back to the show.
Okay. Here I am.
Hey, it's the lighter side of genocide, Webster, just remember.
Okay.
Speaking of the lighter side of genocide, this Middle East situation, and it's big news all over the world. You know, you'd have to be living under a rock to not have heard about it. And one of the aspects that we discuss on this show quite a lot is the CIA involvement with the setting up of the Muslim Brotherhood and things of that nature. So I'd love to actually get your take on what's actually happening here, because the theories are coming out that it's a staged event to cause instability in the region. Do you agree with that?
Yes. What we're dealing with here, I wouldn't call it the Muslim Brotherhood a CIA asset. The Muslim Brotherhood was created by good old British intelligence in the late 1920s in Egypt. And the Muslim Brotherhood is a typical British kind of Freemasonry made up of lawyers, doctors, professors, the privileged classes, right? The wealthy oligarchs, in many ways, of these societies who are anti-popular, they're anti-worker, they're also anti-national. And the British have always used the Muslim Brotherhood to promote backwardness, be it social or economic. In Egypt, there was a party called the WAFD, W-A-F-D, which had a large nationalist wing to it, and the British wanted to counteract that. So they said, we'll play the card of religious fanaticism and various kinds of benighted quasi-religious prejudices, not really religious, but linked to that sort of bigotry. And, of course, in the 1950s, the Muslim Brotherhood was the leading edge of the CIA and British mobilization against President Nasser of Egypt, who was, in many ways, one of the best people on the scene in those years. He's the guy who took the Suez Canal back for Egypt, to whom it obviously belonged, and then used the proceeds to build the Aswan High Dam, this huge monumental engineering work on the Upper Nile, which is the basis for Egypt existing at all. So what you have today, I think you can see, going back to that Obama speech in Cairo, Obama, I don't really believe Obama's a Muslim himself. I think he's probably some kind of an atheist or maybe a Satanist or something like this, but
well,
hard to say.
Well, didn't he have like a whole bunch of voodoo charms that he carries around?
No, that's
around
the his mother, Michelle's mother brought the voodoo charms. Obama's a follower of Nietzsche, the famous proto-Nazi philosopher, and also of Frantz Fanon, who is the sort of precursor of third world terrorism. But I don't think religion means anything to Obama. What it is, though, is an attempt to have an alliance between the United States and the Muslim Brotherhood, if you can believe that. The Al-Qaeda, of course, is a kind of a spin-off from the Muslim Brotherhood, and their version is just a little bit more extreme. If you remember, when Napoleon arrived in Egypt, the first time any large Western army got into the Middle East, Napoleon came to Egypt. He had a Koran in one hand and the Bible in the other, so he wanted to make people think that he was sort of half a Muslim. And during World War II, there was a very widespread belief in the Arab world that Hitler was actually a Muslim. So you can see what Obama's trying to do. He's trying to present himself in this light, and this has now facilitated what is clearly an alliance by the United States with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and in Libya and possibly beyond. But the big picture is more like this. We're dealing with a wave of CIA people power coups. These are color revolutions. They are destabilizations. They are putches, because really what you see going on in Egypt, say, or in Tunisia, you get the wealthy, privileged young people, the golden youth, the college-educated kids with computers who think the West is cool, and Google and Facebook and Twitter, all of that is cool, and you can get them into the public square. You put that on television, and with appropriate manipulation of the Internet, remember, Google is practically identical with the U.S. National Security Agency, you can create a widespread illusion that the government is tremendously unpopular and oppressive. I know something of Tunisia, having been there a couple of times, and the Ben Ali government was not a super oppressive dictatorship. It was sort of a fairly standard authoritarian government, nothing really special. Mubarak probably more authoritarian, but also with some reason, right? Since his predecessor had been assassinated by the U.S. and the British using the Muslim Brotherhood, including Zawahiri, the guy who cavorts around and supposedly is the right hand man of Osama bin Laden, right? He's part of that theatrical company that the CIA keeps going somewhere in the world. Anyway. The idea is these are destabilization.
They're like the traveling Shakespearean plays.
Yeah, they're a bunch of unemployed actors from Beirut and Cairo. Let them set up somewhere, some Shangri-La, who knows what. Anyway,
snorting up hot top quality heroin courtesy of the CIA.
All right, so the idea therefore is it's a destabilization, and it's obviously planned. I mean, it's not like the U.S. government is taken by surprise. This entire operation was discussed with Obama in the fall of 2009. He was following it all during 2010, trying to intervene. And then this Wikipedia, and of course WikiLeaks, is a controlled hangout. Julian Assange is a kind of an MK Ultra second-generation character. He comes from this Anne Hamilton Byrne cult in the area of Melbourne, Australia, 40 years ago, when the little kids were given LSD and all kinds of heavy-duty psychopharmaca. This accounts for the strange emotional physiognomy that we see with this Assange. So that then leads to Tunisia. But Tunisia is what? Tunisia is a putsch. In other words, a cabal, a camarilla of generals behind the scenes, and they take over the government. It would normally be called a palace coup, except that the CIA puts the golden youth into the public square with slogans. You put that on television, and you create in people's minds the illusion that what has happened is that the golden youth have overthrown the mean old dictator, whereas reality, it's a bunch of generals that have been bribed by the CIA. And, of course, in Egypt, I think even clearer, that the crowd you saw in this Tahrir Square, I think, was minuscule for the size of that metropolitan area. Right? Egypt is 90 million people. Cairo is 20 million. I don't think they ever got over 50, 60,000 people in that square. And, of course, you can get all sorts of people. You get anarchists, you get beggars, you get criminal elements, you get all kinds of people. But the golden youth were the hardcore, and then the Muslim Brotherhood when they needed the numbers. But what happened again in Egypt was a coup d'etat behind the scenes by this Tantawi and Annan, the Supreme Military Council, who are now shooting at their own people, right? And if you go back to 1848, right, the European revolutions, you'll see that in France, the government is overthrown, and then there's a period of democratic rule that lasts for 1 or 2 years, and then you get a very nasty dictator, Napoleon III. I think that's pretty much where Egypt is headed. In Italy, it actually then leads to an international war, right? The Austrians try to reassert their control of Italy, and that's sort of what we're seeing in Libya. Or you could compare Libya to the Romanian so-called overthrow of 1989. So this is an operation. It's all done by the CIA, but it's not done by the CIA only. There's also the National Endowment for Democracy. There's Freedom House. There are the non-governmental organizations. There's the Soros Group of Foundations. There is, of course, Google, again, an arm of the NSA, and so on. So it's these sorts of methods. Now, Libya is a case where it breaks down, and then that's the Bay of Pigs example. If it fails, what do you do to save the day for your color revolution? And the British and the French say invade, but what they mean is the U.S. should invade. The British and the French are anxious to fight to the last American. They want the U.S. to do it, and of course the U.S. is so overstretched. There are two or three other things in all this that we should point to. Pakistan is a country which has been seeking to escape the U.S. yoke, because they're very much under attack. The whole Afghan war is really nothing but a war against Pakistan. And here we find this strange case of this Raymond Davis. And according to the Pakistani news sources that I've seen, Ray Davis was a terrorist controller who was in cahoots with the Taliban, and he was in the process of trying to get them some nuclear material, most likely, or chemical or biological, and set that off. In other words, a radiological dirty bomb that would then allow the U.S. to say, aha, the Pakistani nukes are not safe, therefore we have to seize them and have the moral high ground to do that. That's obviously extremely dangerous, and we apparently came very close to that. So in the middle of the wonderful springtime of nations organized by the CIA, a radiological dirty bomb. The other one is this Belarus. I think there are signs now that there will be an attempt to overthrow the government in Belarus. This is already the second time. They tried it in December recently. And if you look at Belarus, one end of it touches Poland, the other end is Russia. If you got a color revolution in Minsk, Belarus, that's tried, it's the road from Warsaw to Moscow, right, if you can visualize it. If you try to have a color revolution in Belarus, if it fails and you get a civil war like Libya, then you might easily have Russian troops coming in on one side. The Polish hotheads of NATO could be relied to come in on the other side. And then you have something that goes infinitely beyond anything in the Middle East, because here now you've got H-bombs on both sides, right? You've got a clash in Central Europe, and Central Europe is just about 1,000 times more sensitive than the Middle East ever could be. This is where a real world war could start. It's almost impossible to imagine a world war that did not start or have something to do with Central Europe. So the question in the background many people wonder is why do all this, right? The CIA seems to have gone berserk. They're in a mad rampage of destabilizations and coups and putches and overthrows, right? Nobody is safe. And I think you can see a number of reasons. One is the people who are in the U.S. empire want to get out. The people who are victims of the unipolar world are sick of it. They'd like to go back to a multipolar world. If you look at, for example, Egypt. They were trying to play the Iran card. Mubarak was opening direct flights from Cairo to Tehran and back. Most importantly, Mubarak had taken the U.S. strategy of the Obama administration, which had been to create a front of Sunni and Arab countries against Iran and Syria. The U.S. idea was to have Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the Gulf Emirates, and Israel all locked together in an alliance under a U.S. nuclear umbrella with U.S. bases in country, and play that against Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, Hamas, the sort of radical people. And Mubarak had said, no, nix, Nothing Doing. And that was in the summer of 2009. And that, I take it, was when the wheels began to turn. It's time to get rid of Mubarak. The U.S. had demanded bases in Egypt. The answer was no. U.S. demanded Egyptian troops for Afghanistan. Answer was no. U.S. wanted Egyptian troops for Iraq. Answer was no. So this is not a puppet.
So the modus operandi is, I'm America, I've got a big stick, you will do what I say, when I say it, otherwise we're going to make sure that your own people turn against you.
In fact, there's more to it than this, because now the unipolar stuff is passé, but you have Russia, China, you have Brazil, you have Turkey, you have Iran, and all of these are alternatives in various ways to the U.S. Just take some examples. Who's playing the Russian card? Well, Saudi Arabia. There's a group in Saudi Arabia around Prince Bandar who are actively arguing, we have got to get rid of the U.S. or at least cut them down a whole lot, and we've got to go with the Russians, because with the Russians, they're not going to overthrow us, but if we stay with the U.S., they will try to overthrow us sooner or later. And they're right. Pakistan, they're playing the China card and the Iran card. Pakistan is in the process of trying to build a pipeline from Iran. It would go into Pakistan, it might go on to India, but it would certainly go into China. And the Chinese and the Pakistanis are building a new fighter plane, and generally speaking, it's the natural alliance for both of them against India, quite frankly, but against India as a puppet of the U.S. these days, or more or less that. So you can go through the list. Bahrain, right? Why is Bahrain being destabilized? Because they told the U.S., you can have your naval base here for the Fifth Fleet, but you cannot use it to overthrow or to attack Iran. And, of course, that's pure heresy. You can't do that. So you go through the list. Gaddafi. Gaddafi is actually very interesting. Gaddafi is trying to play all the cards. Gaddafi says he wants to kick out the West and bring in Russia, China, and Brazil, and India. So he's playing virtually every card you can imagine. Let me also point out, I mean, Belarus was already an example. This is not limited to the Arab or the Islamic world. Italy is very, very much under attack, and this goes right back to the original WikiLeaks document dump inspired by the CIA, chosen, you know, selected by the CIA. If you look at that, the third WikiLeaks document dump, the targets are who? Putin, obviously one of the people the CIA hates most in the world, right? Their arch nemesis. But there's a Putin
rival with their KGB counterpart. Yeah,
yeah. But look, this is a real statesman. This is not, you know, this. I wouldn't denigrate him in any way. Putin is undoubtedly the smartest head of government in the world in the past 10 years, by far, no contest.
His, I thought Putin was with these guys at a high level, though. I mean,
no, that's ridiculous. This is the fallacy of talking about globalization as if there were an equal place at the table for Russia, China. There is not. This is Anglo-American imperialism. The so-called New World Order is the old world order. It's U.S., British, Israeli, maybe world supremacy. And the others are in the outer darkness. And really, make no mistake about that. You can see what's being done to Egypt. The idea that there's somehow globalization, that all countries, you know, the elite of all countries can be a part of, that's a carefully cultivated illusion, but it's absolutely false. There is no
such
thing.
That correlates with something a friend of mine told me, is that there's two new world orders that are trying to emerge here. There's the Russian-Chinese new world order who want to take over the world for themselves, and then there's the Anglo-American new world order, and they're essentially these two factions of evil that are fighting over the world as their prize.
I think that's way too simplistic, and I think that gives too much of the benefit of the doubt to the U.S. and the British. I think that's very naive. Probably not based on knowing very much, because the Russian demand really is that the Russians say we should have the right to a sphere. We should have a sphere of Russian influence pretty much around the borders of Russia. And you can see this is largely defensive. It's overwhelmingly defensive. The Chinese are also defensive, except to the degree that they just need raw materials and oil. They're interested in normal trade and commercial relations, the development of infrastructure, the building of pipelines, and so forth. The U.S. and British, however, say, we get to push NATO all the way into the former Soviet Union, right? Into Ukraine, into Georgia, into Belarus, and...
Yeah. There's no end to what they want to do, is there, Webster? Our very special guest is Webster Tarpley from Tarpley.net, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, right here, live on American Freedom Radio. And, you know, conveniently, we have one of the most spanking and fabulous guests that we've ever had on the show. His name's Webster Tarpley from Tarpley.net. Webster, welcome back. Webster, are you there?
Yeah,
sorry,
hello.
Webster, okay. It's the co-host, Will, here. Just
guys, if you start from this premise of globalization or the globalists, right, like they're all the same, this is very wrong. You're dealing with U.S.-British imperialism. And on the other side, there is this combination, you can call it the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It's Russia, China, and others that have been driven together pretty much for self-defense. You always have to distinguish between the aggressor and the ones that are on the defensive posture. What I wanted to say about Putin, Berlusconi, this is a very close personal relationship, and this then takes on the form of the South Stream pipeline, right? It's one of the ways you could get natural gas out of Eastern Europe and bring it to Western Europe without going through these NATO puppet states of virulently anti-Russian outlook, Poland, Ukraine, the Baltics. So that's a huge project. And then between Berlusconi is also very much in with Gaddafi on a whole other series of development projects. You could even talk about an axis that goes from Moscow to Rome to Tripoli and then back to Minsk, because Gaddafi himself has been playing the Belarus card. So these are all things that the U.S. can't stand. I mean, they CIA hates this stuff because the U.S. has nothing to offer. The U.S. is offering the International Monetary Fund with their neoliberal free trade, free market economics, deregulation, privatization, union busting, the race to the bottom, and then interference under the pretext of human rights. I had to laugh today. I was watching Obama and the NATO Secretary General, right, this Danish guy Rasmussen, and they're pontificating and sniffing about human rights violations in Libya. These are people whose hands are dripping with blood from the latest NATO atrocities. What did they kill? 8 kids last week in Afghanistan, 1.5 million Iraqis. And these people are setting themselves up as judges of human rights in Libya. This is absolutely insane. But you can see that as the world depression gets worse and worse, the contrast, right, the tension between this Russo-Chinese, Iranian, Pakistani block, whatever you want to call it, and the Western, the Anglo-American coalition. This becomes more and more accentuated, and you have to see it.
Well, Webster, just to weigh in here a minute, I mean, and just to try and break things down for our audience too, you mentioned before about the Pakistan and China perhaps ganging up on India to some extent.
No, not ganging. Yeah, it's defensive. Remember, India is being armed by the U.S. with nuclear weapons, right?
But Pakistani ISI is CIA-controlled, right?
It has been, but maybe not so much now. In other words, that's exactly what this Ray Davis case points to, is that they've had it. In other words, the U.S. policy of the last years has been to take the civil war in Afghanistan and export that into Pakistan. The goal of all this is to prevent the building of infrastructure, railroads, pipelines, and normal commercial relations. If you look at Afghanistan, if you wanted to build a railway from India to Berlin, Paris, Western Europe, that would have to go through the Khyber Pass, meaning Afghanistan. So there's one reason to be there. But Pakistan is even more important. You look at Pakistan on the map, they call it the Pakistani Energy Corridor. If you want to have a pipeline that goes from the Iranian oil fields and goes into China, really the only way to do it is to go through Pakistan and cross the Himalayas north of India, north of Kashmir. This is the biggest single problem for China, is how to have a guaranteed overland oil source that's not controlled by the U.S. and British fleets, and, of course, cuts the 12,000-mile trip around South Asia down to something much more manageable. So the reason the U.S. is attacking Pakistan is because they don't want this to happen. And Pakistan is susceptible to being divided, right? You have the Punjab, you have the Sindh, you have the Waziristan, you have Pashtunistan. And the idea is to foment the breakup, right? The U.S. is carving countries left and right. Sudan has been carved into two parts a couple of weeks ago. Yemen is on its way to being carved into two parts. As of right now, Libya.
They've been radicalizing Islam for decades now, the British.
Yes, but again, always with the goal, there's always a specific goal in mind, right? And the goal is often anti-Chinese, anti-Russian, with these Islamic characters being used as a tool in the process. So it's certainly not the case that the Chinese and the Russians want to take over the world. No, but that goes beyond their immediate purview, right? I'm also not arguing for anybody taking over the world. The point is, you can go back to Egypt, say, in the 1950s. When Nasser wanted to build the Aswan High Dam, he turned to the U.S. and he said, "What do you say? You want to build it with me?" And the U.S. said, "No, because you're a communist." So he said, "Fine, in that case, I'll go to Moscow." And sure enough, the Russians were willing to do it, and it was finally an Italian engineering company that got to build the Aswan High Dam. If you're somebody like Egypt, right, you're going to be much better off if you say to the U.S., "What's your offer?" And then you can say to the Chinese, "What's your offer?" This is normal life. It's this suffocating unipolar business that has to end.
And what I find difficult, Webster, is that we've got so much degrees of manipulation on things like the economy, the oil prices, and things of that nature, and it threatens global instability. And at this point in time, I think we're at a real pivotal point in history, and a lot of people are talking about World War III, gas prices going through the absolute roof. I mean, what's your take on the future with all this going on? Do you think we might be heading for another world war?
Well, if you look at the 1930s, the lesson is when you have a world depression, then this can indeed destroy the politics of the major states to the point where a world war becomes possible and possibly inevitable. So we are in a world economic depression of unprecedented proportions. This is not a boom and bust event. This is not a business cycle event. There is no business cycle that will lift you out of this. It is the disintegration of the imperialist world economy. It is the disintegration and breakdown of the dollar system. And it's, of course, due to the banking panic that destroyed the U.S. and British banking systems back in the summer of 2008. And at the heart of this, we find the derivatives. And I would like to argue that it is the Austrian school, it is the so-called libertarian economics, it is the Friedmanites and the Chicago Boys, and the Hayeks and the von Mises that have caused this depression. Because
I don't think it's the Keynesians.
No, they're not, because they didn't have the power. The Keynesians have been out of power for 30 years before this, right? And I don't think they amount to anything. The questions are deregulation, privatization, and union busting. Let's just look at a couple. If you look at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, those were fine as long as they were government institutions run under government regulation. They were privatized, and it is from the privatization of these things that you get the abuses that they had. Even worse is the deregulation. Derivatives were banned. They were illegal, strictly outlawed in the United States from 1936 until 1982 under a great piece of New Deal legislation, the Commodity Exchange Act of 1936. And that had grown out of the fact that people had used futures, a kind of derivative, to corner the wheat market and try to drive up the price while starving people in the U.S. and around the world. So between 36 and 82, there were practically no derivatives. They were then legalized by stupid Reagan, acting under Austrian and Chicago, you know, reactionary auspices. But they were so smelly that it took another 20 years to really get them fully rehabilitated. And you had bipartisan consensus, right? You had Reagan, you had Alan Greenspan, you had Bob Rubin for the Democrats and Larry Summers for the Democrats, until at the end of the 90s, with Phil Graham finally and Wendy Graham, they were able to fully rehabilitate derivatives. And after that, in the 7 or 8 years after 1999, you get a world total of $1.5 quadrillion dollars of derivatives. So $1,500 trillion dollars of derivatives. Now, that's the depression. This stuff with subprime housing, this is a joke. This is a marginal phenomenon. It's $2 or $3 trillion.
So you're saying it's the rampant commodity.
It's derivatives. It's the wonders of derivatives. You know, if you buy a stock and you lose everything, you lose 100%. With a derivative, it's easy to lose 50 times, 100 times, 500 times your original investment. And there was the reason that every zombie bank in Wall Street was bankrupt and still is because they have got these, again, the U.S. share of the derivatives is probably about a quadrillion. And notice that, you know, this is... the world GDP is something like $65 trillion, and we're talking $1,500 trillion of derivatives. This is out of the question, right? The only thing you can do with derivatives is destroy them, right? Shred them, delete them, and the zombie banks that have them have just got to be shut down, and that would be the law in the United States, right? The Sheila Bair should really go to Wall Street some Friday and say, guess what? You people are all bankrupt, and we're liquidating you under Chapter 7 forced liquidation because you guys are so far gone that you're hopeless. But this is what this is exactly too big to fail.
That's the problem. And
sorry?
On the subject of these guys have hijacked the government. That's the problem, isn't it? And on the
yeah, but now look. I want to hammer a little bit at this libertarian stuff, right? The richest man in New York is Koch. This guy Koch. He calls himself Koch. K-O-C-H spells Koch in my dictionary. So the Koch brothers, and one of the Koch brothers is the richest man in New York City, richest man in Babylon. They are the founders of the Cato Institute, which is the main organ of libertarianism here in the United States, right? The main intellectual supporters of von Mises and von Hayek and these awful,
they're
awful
cronies,
people.
Though, aren't they? They're cronies. Huh? They're crony capitalists, right?
Well, they're exploiters, right?
I do love them because they fund anti-climate cultist movements, though.
I'm afraid that's not enough, and that is largely window dressing. In other words, the Koch brothers will give you, as long as you are for deregulation, privatization, union busting, these are people who think that any tax is communist, any regulation is communist, and when they say liberty, they mean their own license to exploit, to oppress, to flay people alive. And the Koch brothers...
We've got both sides, though, right? We've the left who do window dressing techniques also, right?
Yeah, but the left. What left are we talking about? You have a Wall Street puppet. Obama is a Wall Street puppet, obviously. And left of that, I don't know what there is. Anyway, let's get right to the heart of it.
I mean,
right now in Wisconsin, we...
founding.
Sorry?
The UN and their socialist founding.
Yeah, but what power do they have? You see, the UN is simply a creature of the U.S. and the British, nine times out of ten. Look, guys, in Wisconsin right now, there is a strike movement, right? And the reactionary governor there, Walker, he's practically a fascist, says, we're going to take away your trade union rights. We're going to smash the trade unions. It's not enough if they give up, you know, part of their pay. It's not enough if they pay for more of their pension and all the rest of it. They've also got to have the unions basically destroyed. Now, this character, Walker, is in office partly thanks to $40,000 or $50,000 he got from Koch, the fascist billionaire there in New York. Now, we now reach the point of choice, right? Are you with labor or are you against labor? And if you're against labor, then you're a strike breaker. You're a scab, and you can come along and say, well, I'm really a libertarian, and I do this because I believe in Friedman and von Hayek. You're still a scab. On the other hand, the question of supporting labor, and I would come down very heavily in favor of labor. And what I find amazing is people who call themselves libertarians who say, I'm against big government, but I'm in favor of this tin pot governor of Wisconsin crushing the labor movement. Now, those are rights that the American people have won over centuries of struggle. And they came together, of course, in the New Deal with Roosevelt. But the vast majority of this stuff was bottom-up. This was grassroots organizing, right? These are the sit-down strikes, the Toledo Auto Light strike, the general strike in Minneapolis and San Francisco, and so forth. And it's the accumulated achievements of centuries of labor struggles, and I regard this now as the great watershed of our time, where you have to choose sides. Now, The one thing I would say, just a couple of easy things, to get out of a depression, of course, you got to go way beyond what these people in Wisconsin are demanding. For example, if there is a budget crisis, who should pay? There's a depression. Who should pay? Well, the people who created the depression should pay. Were those the cops, the sanitation men, the firemen, the teachers, the health workers? No. Wall Street fat cats, zombie bankers, hedge fund hyenas.
Oh, yeah. Our Webster Tarpley is our freaking amazing, awesome guest. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. And we'll be right back after the break. Tarpley.net. And welcome back. Oh, yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest is Webster Tarpley from Tarpley.net. I've got a question for you, Webster, if I may.
Fire away.
Yeah, supposedly, the Muslim Brotherhood is actually hated by a lot of governments in the Arab region, and Gaddafi, Ben Ali, and Mubarak have killed many members of the Muslim Brotherhood. Is that something you're familiar with?
Yes, it probably is, because again, this is a group. It's a group of subversives that the British and the U.S. have traditionally used to try to weaken existing governments, right? They were the opposition against Mubarak, and not all of them are that bad, although some of them are quite bad indeed. And if you look at that Cyrenaica, that seems to be the handiwork of the Muslim Brotherhood. There's also a group called Al-Qaeda of the Islamic Maghreb, and they are absolutely anti-Gaddafi and supporting this so-called, well, it's not a revolution, right, because it's a putsch. It's the fomenting of a civil war by the imperialists, and pretty soon the imperialists will be there in numbers. Right, we've had 8 British caught there. Right, one from MI6, 6 from the SAS, 1 from the Foreign Office. We had 3 Dutch Marines caught there the other day. These people are there to lay out the landing areas for an invasion, and there might be a no-fly zone, which starts with a merciless air attack for 24 or 48 hours. So I urge people to oppose this, right? Hands off Libya. The imperialists have no lessons to give anybody. Least of all, Gaddafi. Gaddafi is number 53 on the Human Development Index. He's the most advanced country in Africa by a significant margin. He's got a better social development index than Russia. So he's actually been doing quite well. His income disparities are less than the U.S. His rate of incarceration is lower than the Czech Republic. He's beating the Dutch in some key aspects of social development. So Gaddafi is simply being demonized in the way that Saddam Hussein was. This should not surprise us.
Yeah, Webster. I mean, I've seen a lot of your commentary over the years and your appearances in the Obama deception, and I think you make a lot of great points. The first segment here, you kind of rearranged a little bit my view of how I see this whole structure working. And, you know, just if you could comment on a couple of points. You know, I agree there's an Anglo-American establishment, and they're imperialists, and I know all about the East India Trading Company and all the rest of it. But I think they've moved on, and they've kind of expanded, and they've gone into the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergs and Trilaterals and all these sorts of groups.
Sure.
And they hold a lot of power, and I only thought there were a few wild cards, about 5 countries not under this private Federal Reserve style fractional reserve model, being Iran, Cuba, you know, a couple of others, Libya. Now, how is it that Pakistan and China and India or any of these guys are outside of the real secret society control?
China, of course, the genius of China is that they have used protectionist, mercantilist, and dirigist methods, the kind of methods that I support, Hamiltonian methods from the U.S. point of view, Colbertiste methods in the French tradition.
What about one-child policies and things like that, though? I mean,
sorry?
What sort of philosophy? What about their one-child policy?
Yeah, that was a terrible mistake, and that, of course, that's British Malthusian propaganda. You have to remember that the whole, Mao Tse-tung was very much under the influence of a lot of British writers, right? The whole Chinese perception of the world, if you go back to the 19th century, that when the Chinese are awakened to the world, they see it, they think there's either the Chinese view or there's the outside view, and they think the outside view is the British view. And only later on do they realize that the British are themselves, you know, the free trade doctrine of Britain is really not typical of the Western world at all, least of all of the U.S. or France or Germany other countries.
The humanism and the atheism that took hold of the Eastern Bloc, and then they started smashing down all the churches and the spread of communism. I mean, to me, that comes from this Malthusian and also Darwinist model that the Masons helped push 150 years ago in Britain. I mean, to me, that's what I mean by globalists. It's these people who just want to destroy man's connection with himself and replace
it. That is, of course, a large part of the philosophy. But there also you're dealing with power centers. You're dealing with the city of London and Wall Street. You can say you're dealing with the echelon, if you wanted to describe it a little bit more broadly. The echelon combination would then add in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, right? The Anglo-Saxon conspiracy, so to speak, around the U.S. and the British, and the Israelis, right? But other than this, everybody else is either a very, very junior third-rate partner or a barely tolerated pariah where the tensions are constantly overflowing. I mean, again, between the U.S. and Russia, this could hardly be clearer that the U.S. is attempting, they attempted to have Ukraine join NATO. They attempted to have Georgia join NATO. The U.S. is actively fomenting that war in 2008 with Saakashvili, their puppet, attacking Russia with weapons. The whole terrorism in the Northern Caucasus is a British-U.S. production. The British have been there for 150 years.
Webster, we have to have you back on. We have to have you back on for 2 hours. This is great stuff. But just quickly, for our listeners, who owns the Federal Reserve in your mind? Who's behind the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, Wall Street. The point is that Wall Street controls the Federal Reserve. That is the objection to the Federal Reserve. The way in which this worked was in 1895, J.P. Morgan forced Grover Cleveland to turn the control of the U.S. public debt over to the House of Morgan and to London in this famous crisis of 1895. And that is the origin of the...
Or Nathan Rothschild. Nathaniel Rothschild.
No, the House of Morgan and the city of London as a whole. And Rothschild is one little fish in the London... Again, at the top of the city of London is the, you know, the royal family, the British aristocracy. It's much bigger than Rothschild is an operative
Germans.
Who's pushed. Rothschild is a guy who does some dirty work and often gets caught. Right? Doesn't argue for a high status. Let me just argue what should happen though. Two program points: tax Wall Street. Wall Street pays no taxes. Goldman Sachs paid 2% of their profits for corporate income tax. It's a joke. We want a 1% Wall Street sales tax on all turnover, all sales, all trading. 1%. If you have flash trading, high-frequency trading, program trading, 1% goes into the public coffers.
All right, it's unfortunate we can't. We don't have enough time. Webster, if you can still hear us, we'd love to have you back on for 2 hours again sometime. His website, ladies and gentlemen, is tarplay.net. You've been listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Check us out at gorillamedia.co.nz. We'll see you again sometime.